Welcome, fanatics, to another episode of Two Shades of Gray. Once again, Two Shades of Gray is brought to you by our good friends, Heartland Flags, heartlandflagpoles.com. Stop in, check them out, 3719 Southwest 9th Street in Des Moines. Get yourself a Cyclone flag, fly it high, fly it proudly. We're just spring coming up here. Is it already spring?
I believe it technically became spring. What, a couple days ago today or the day before or something?
I think it means it's time to be spending a little bit more time outside, get those flags flying high. And it doesn't even have to be an Iowa State one, Rob. They have every flag you can imagine there.
Anything and everything you'd want. Monday. So yesterday it was.
Yeah, okay. I thought maybe I saw something about that.
Spring equinox.
So spring, yeah. So here we are. Rob, how you doing today? You just were up in Ames.
Yeah. I'm doing okay. I think we can... I'm going to cut to the chase here, though.
Oh, jeez.
I was very pleased to see that Ted Flint came on the Fallcast and helped diversify that group. It's actually broadened quite a bit. We've had a bunch of people in there. I think I even sat in on one of them years ago. But afterwards, you pronounced it the greatest podcast ever, I believe, on Twitter. You said it was the greatest podcast in the history of podcasts, something to that degree.
I don't recall ever tweeting it.
And I'd like to say that I was hurt, but actually I was just extremely angry that you would say that when we have the Two Shades of Gray podcast. We're building something new and, an established podcast with a guest, a wonderful man, Ted Flint.
Great man. Great guy.
And
brought me some barbecue sauce when he came last
week. Or that stuff made right in Ankeny, right?
Yep.
Good stuff.
Yep. I believe they're a sponsor of the Tailgate Society.
I believe so as well. So greatest podcast in the history of podcasts. Are we ever going to be able to team up?
I don't know. Pop it? I'm looking through my Twitter feed. I don't believe I ever said this. He was just on the... Yeah, I did say that. Yeah, I did. I said he was just on the greatest podcast of all time, that much I know.
Yep.
Well, see, here's the thing, Rob. I have a huge ego.
Yeah, there's no doubt about
that.
The
way I look at it, any podcast that I'm on, I'm going to consider the greatest podcast of all time.
That's whichever is the most recent one. But you also have a short attention span, so it will be the most recent one is the greatest. And then the one a week ago was, that's just old news.
It's just like how it is in sports, right? Whoever's playing right now is the best of all time. That's just the way it works.
Yeah. For some people.
You forget about what, you know.
Well, that's true.
The greats that came before
you. Others fade in the background. And then, of course, there are greats that you weren't aware of. Like, I can't talk about how great Oscar Robertson was because I didn't watch him play. Mr. Triple-Double back in the day.
All I was really trying to do was just kind of hype up my podcast. I wasn't trying to offend you.
I know that.
I clearly did, and I apologize. I, you know what, Rob? Since we've been doing this is what, maybe our seventh podcast we've
done
together?
Something like that, yeah.
I think we've done a tremendous job.
Yeah. I think I have, too. I'm trying to match your ego, and I can't do it because I'm a pretty humble guy.
It takes years of work to be this egotistical. Someday you'll get on my level.
Hey, all the CF podcasts are marvelous, of course.
So. They are, except for the ones where it's just Williams by himself.
Or when you're not.
How about the ego on that guy thinking he could just do a podcast all by himself, huh?
Yeah, he's. I don't know how he finds the hours in the day to do all the work he does.
So you were up in Ames today. Iowa State football met with the media.
Yep.
The big news is, I'm sure, you know, we're going to be uploading this. Right now, today, it's 1:45 on a Tuesday. We'll probably get this uploaded about 3:30, I would imagine. So this will be old news by then. But Joel Lanning, starting Mike linebacker.
At this point, yeah. And that was, you know, kind of surprising to hear. Although, it was foreshadowed when Campbell announced that the change was taking place, that they were going to work him out there. And he said that he looks like an NFL. When you look at an NFL linebacker, it looks like Joel Lanning, just in terms of his size, his strength, all that kind of stuff. So he's doing well. Tyson Veit, the linebacker's coach, said that he's done well. He's making mistakes, of course, adapting to something new, but he's learning from those mistakes.
He's not
repeating things over and over and over again, meaning he's paying a lot of attention to detail, been in the film study. He's become kind of best buddies with Willie Harvey now, obviously the top returner at linebacker, I would say. So, you know, in the film room a lot, working at it a lot. He seems to like it okay. You know, it's really a position that if he masters it and plays it well, it's clearly a position in which he would at least have a shot at playing at the next level.
So how do we find out that he was the number one Mike linebacker? Was Tyson asked the question, or was it on the depth chart, or how did that come about?
He said, I can't say unequivocally, but I don't think he was asked directly.
Yeah.
Is he number one, number two, number three? He said he's number one, and I mean, pretty straightforward quote. He's the number one Mike linebacker for us right now. My emphasis, put that in italics. He's doing a great job there running with the ones, and it's certainly his job right now to lose.
Okay.
Now, they said a lot will shake out. He said the ones, twos, and threes are all getting a lot of work. Talked about Tymar Sutton playing well. We know what Harvey can do. A number of guys in that group. A lot's going to shake out, and the scrimmage are going to have 1 week in advance of the spring game where they, I think he said, you know, up and down and back and forth in terms of depth, how they're arranging it, you know. I think they really want him to be the number one Mike linebacker. And so far he's done nothing to give them second thoughts at that, which is encouraging.
Okay, so let's break this down. Let's break it down. Should we start with the positive or the negative if you're looking at it from different ways here? Which one do we want to start with? Let's start negative. That way we can end it on a high note. Okay?
Oh, very nice.
Negative is here, you got a quarterback, a guy who for the first 4 years at Iowa State hasn't played linebacker since he's in eighth grade. Now number one in your middle linebacker spot, which I think says a lot about your middle linebacker spot and where it's currently.
To be fair, that was a pretty good eighth grade team.
Oh, I hear they just dominated Johnston.
Yeah,
just
no doubt.
Mopped the floor with them. And so, the negative is Iowa State clearly doesn't have great depth at the linebacker or even probably talent, especially at the middle linebacker spot, right, to where you can have a guy who's been a quarterback for all 4 years, hasn't played linebacker in 8 years, step in and only a couple months of practice time, be the number one middle linebacker. That's the negative. The positive is you're 100% right and the coaches are right. The guy looks like a linebacker, 6'2", 240. A lot of people thought he should have been put at linebacker the second he stepped in on campus at Iowa State. I think one of the reasons he wasn't is because Rhodes' staff struggled so much recruiting quarterbacks, and he was still a good talent. He had a good arm, athletic, that they could make him a quarterback. As we saw last year, he was a solid quarterback. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say he was a great quarterback, but he was a solid quarterback. He looks the part. You know he's smart. And I don't want to have to kill any of the linebackers before him, but he can't be worse than what we had last year.
Yeah.
That spot. Last year, it was very bad. It was very bad. So I look at it and say, you know what, he's already had 4 months there. Now we sit here April. The first game is what, 4.5, 5 months away? Five months? He's got five more months to work at it. Is it that much different than bringing in a JUCO kid in May and starting him?
I think the only thing that's different is the fact that he's been in your program for so long, and he understands the game so well. So he's Division I ready. I guess I can say the past is the past. So as far as the negative, regardless, if you haven't, you know, you met Jordan Harris, you know, apparently missed on him. Great guy, hard hitter, but he went elsewhere because this staff evaluated him and they didn't think he could be the guy there. So you're right. There haven't been a lot of, you know, there have been a lot of misses at linebacker in recent years. But the fact that Lanning has done this, I think, should only be viewed as a positive because, as Campbell has said, Veit reiterated it today, you want your best football players on the field as much as possible. And in their estimation, Joel Lanning is one of the best football players on the team. Hence, you know, they don't like his ceiling at quarterback compared to Jacob Parks as much.
Yep.
But, I mean, his numbers, I was going to look these up.
Him and Park's numbers were very, very similar last year. Now, granted, he got some starts against some lesser competition teams, but still, they were very, very similar. I'm with the staff. I think Park's the guy. I love the fact that they're pretty much – this is a move as far as saying we're going all in on Park, no more of this playing two-quarterback system. Although I think they can still use Joel in some ways, and they've talked
He's
about
the
that.
Running quarterback, running quarterback, the short yardage,
which is
guy.
To me is different, right? There's still one center. There's still one guy who is the quarterback, and maybe you bring someone else for the package. But there's no question on the team who the leader is on offense, and that's Jacob Park. I love that. I don't have any problem with Joel Lanning being the guy. But I don't think you can. I think we can be excited about what he could potentially be just because of his size and his speed and the fact that he's been in the program. I don't think it's going to be overwhelming for him.
Yeah.
A lot of times the guys come from JUCO when they come from a high school. They're not mature. Their bodies aren't physically there because they haven't been in a Big 12 weight room. Joel doesn't have to worry about those two things. All he has to worry about is getting enough plays in to where he can be instinctive. And that's where I worry. How instinctive is he going to be at the middle linebacker spot when the Bolts are flying against Big 12 teams? And we're not going to know until it starts. But there's no question, talent-wise, he can do it. He can do it.
Yeah. I mean, good point on the instincts. And our good friend John Walters asked that very question. How are his instincts
at
linebacker? And I'll quote Veit here. He said, good. Again, it's a function of now. I'm on the reactive end of things. I'm not the guy dictating the tempo. I'm still reading things as a linebacker naturally, but it's a lot different for him. Now a guy motions, he has to adjust to it. Prior to that, he's dictating the motion and seeing how people adjust to it. So he ends it up by saying he's learning those things, trying to get his eyes in the right spot all the time rather than the beginning of the play, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, tough as nails kid, always has been.
Yep.
Young man.
He's not going to be scared.
Yeah, nope, not in the least. I mean, he even said, to him, running the way he almost sought out contact, it's not very different other than you're chasing the runner. When you're running it, you're trying to get away and then maybe run somebody over in his case. In this case, he wants to prevent being run over. And he said one really positive thing in helping his learning curve is having guys like David Montgomery, Mike Warren, fast, strong, shifty. You know, you've really, they said, you got to square up your eyes on the hips and don't whiff. Or yeah. Like you said, you know, don't let them break your ankles.
No.
So I think he's got the right mentality. He always had. I mean, he's gone through a lot. You know, the different coordinators, the head coaching change. One interesting thing today is I think our pal Tommy Burchest had the previous staff ever brought up linebacker before or suggested it as a change, and he said no. He just said no. That was it. And I think part of that stems from loyalty and being a man of his word, which I think Paul Rhodes holds very dear. You know, as a good man, that's very important to him, and I think they recruited him as a quarterback, and they weren't going to mess around with it. And he was their best option.
They had no other options, Rob. I mean, all of a sudden they have Jacob Park and they have Zeb Nolan. They feel a lot more comfortable being able to push him off somewhere else because they have two Big 12 caliber quarterbacks when before Iowa State struggled to have one Big 12 caliber quarterback.
Yep. Yep. And
so,
how about Lanning's career numbers? 19 touchdown passes, 7 interceptions.
Solid.
He was efficient.
Yep.
I mean,
strong
it's
runner.
It's not very often you have a better than 2-to-1 ratio at Iowa State for touchdowns to interceptions. Now, granted, there are more sometimes when you're a 1.5 year plus starter, but
You could be negative at Lanning as far as quarterback in terms of maybe some of his games. The Iowa game, he got a little too jittery.
Held it too long sometimes.
But the one thing I never questioned about him is he was a gamer. Like he wasn't. Yep. If he needed to go get a first down, he might not get it, but he was going to run your ass trying to get it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what I loved about him. And hopefully, he's going to bring that attitude to linebacker. We heard stories back when he was redshirting and he was, you know, second or third string quarterback when he would throw an interception in practice. And you know, the quarterbacks, they're wearing green jerseys, right? They're not supposed to hit or do the hitting. And he found out the guy who intercepted, he ran him down and laid him out on the sideline.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of his mentality. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm excited to see it. I'm a little bit, you know, the spring game will be kind of fun to watch him out there. Not that you ever learn a whole lot.
Yeah.
But I think some things can maybe stand out in the spring game.
Sure. Sure.
So anything else? You were up there. Anything else stand out? Anyone else?
We finally got to interview Deshaunte Jones, obviously, since he's not a freshman anymore. So I'll have something on him up probably tomorrow morning at some point. Alan Lazard as a mentor. You know, we talked to Alan today. And, of course, wide receivers coach Brian Gasser. But Jones is there's so much intrigue at that position for Iowa State. It's so deep. And we've talked about that before. Sometimes injuries happen. Like that Bundridge is – what would have been his best year, how deep was that? And then he's out and other guys got hurt, et cetera.
Got hurt, what, the second, third play of the game of the season?
Yeah, yeah. But at this point, knock on granite, we've got just an incredibly deep group and a versatile group with the size you have in Lazard, Eaton, Butler, others. And then you've got – they talked about how Jalen – Martin has really impressed, did during his redshirt year, continues to impress. Then you've got Deshaunte Jones and Trevor Ryan. It's your speed guys.
You bring in Josh Johnson as a freshman.
Yep.
Tariq Milton will be coming in.
You got a tight pass-catching tight end of the caliber of what we expect to be a high-caliber Chase Allen, others. I mean, this is going to be
– it'll be fun.
I think they're going to be able to move the ball in multiple ways, and I think Manning's going to have a lot of fun putting together this play. I'm sure he's put a lot of it together, but I mean, continuing to put together and tweak a playbook and game plans with this kind of group. But probably the best. I don't see how they're. I can't think of a deeper wide receiver core at Iowa State since I've been following the Cyclones anyway.
Well, they haven't had a top guy that's been Al Lazard. Blythe would be the only one comparable, yeah. And Blythe was obviously one of the all-time greatest at Iowa State. But I think Lazard is the best as far as just pure talent, size, everything. And then from there, I mean, let's say DeShonte Jones, he's our second-best guy. Most years, he would be the number one receiver.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited. Matt Eden, you know what I mean, ever since Coach said he could be a number one type guy.
Yep.
That's the one I'll be watching on the spring game as well, just to see how he looks. Because physically, 6'4", 210, he looks the part.
Nothing but good things mentioned about him as well today. I know perhaps there were some rumors swirling around that he might have been banged up. No indication that that's the case. They say he just continues to work and show that he's capable of being that number one type of guy, like Matt Campbell said, which so excited people, and I think rightfully so.
So, question for you as a media member. What do you think about, and Kirk Ferentz has done this for years too, Campbell not allowing freshmen to be interviewed? Any problem with it as a media member?
It hamstrings you when you want to write a story, or sometimes you want to write a feature story about the new guy that's making, you know, positive waves. I understand them doing it. You don't want that extra distraction. You don't want them to think about – you don't want to have to – you can spend that whole year training them on how you deal with the media instead of doing it on the fly. You know, where you don't trash talk a certain way. You don't do that. You know, you really prepare them for the moment. And DeShonte was very polished in his presentation today. Well, I thought about asking him if he kind of wishes he could have talked after some of those games he had last year,
yeah.
But didn't get to that. But I don't, you know, ideally, from a selfish standpoint of wanting to tell as many stories as possible and to tell them in as compelling a fashion as possible, I don't like that they're muzzled as freshmen, but I get it, and you know, ultimately, what people want to see is them win more football games. And if it helps them stay focused that way, if it helps it just to be like, hey, you're not talking, you're just playing. I see that. And I think from a fan's perspective, I'd prefer it.
Okay.
You know, just if it translates into, you know, a rise, you know,
yeah.
More success and that lack of that added distraction, you know, builds a better football player.
Anything else stand out from today? Any other big news, players you talked to?
Not really.
Tommy Burch asked any kickers questions today?
He did.
Oh,
he did.
God,
he did one for you. They really like the kid from Oregon State.
He did it for me, didn't he?
Yeah, and then he gave a little smile. I should have taken a picture.
That son of a bitch.
Francis, you know, this Lake Francis, the freshman, I think he redshirted last year, Sylvester.
Yep.
They like him as well. So they say they're pretty pleased with all of them, but... Tommy got pretty. He was really doing his muckraking on the kicker. So he said, "Just who has the leg up right now?" And Veit wouldn't bite on that. He just he said, "Oh, we're working them all about the same, and we're just going to keep working them and go from there." So unsettled. So this controversy, this kicker controversy, is going to keep swirling probably well past the spring, even into fall camp.
The good news is that we know that we have a reporter in the Des Moines area that will get us a story as soon as it breaks.
Yes. And
so
he will be first.
He will be first
with that.
And you know what? I'll send him a congratulatory tweet.
You should. I'll send him a card or something.
I should. Like one that sings when you open it, plays a little music.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So, let's transition off. We, you know, I figured that was a good thing to hit on right away, but we're fresh off the round of 32 loss to Purdue up in Milwaukee. It was a tough game, Rob. It was a tough game.
Yeah, it's one where you look back and say, if they hadn't played, basically, I don't think they didn't play terrible in the first half. They just played a below average half. not even horribly below average. Purdue played really, really well.
I thought it was a mixture.
But you're still, what, it's they hit the two late threes to really get some separation. You're still right there. You weathered it while you reverted to a lot of the one-on-one offense. They stopped running offense.
Yes, they did.
And it reminded me very much of Cincinnati and some of those early Big 12 games. And I don't know. I didn't think that was going to happen again this year. I mean, basically, they dug themselves too big of a hole. And to not get right after it out of halftime, to fall behind by 19 then after trailing by 13, it's just too much to come back at. But, man, how fun is it when they're digging themselves out? And it looked like they were going to do it when Burton hit the two free throws to
inch ahead
because you've turned that tide. And you could tell Purdue was just flabbergasted that they had basically allowed the Cyclones to surge that greatly past them. But, you know, they hit big shots after that.
Yep. And,
you know, the Cyclones did too. I don't think they have anything to hang their heads about. The overall brilliant play for 11 or 12 minutes, I think they played a pretty good ball game all told when you couple that with the below average first half.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was a tale of both teams were horrible, horrible matchups for each other. Mm-hmm. And I thought Purdue exploited it earlier and a little bit more often. Yeah. Iowa State took till about, what, the 13, 14-minute mark of the second half before they finally said, you know what, we're going, yep. Small ball. We're putting four guards out there.
Burton
Deontay's playing the five.
Yep.
And what it allowed us to do was if when Young or Bowie were in the game, Purdue could have a big guy down low because you're not worried about those two shooting threes against
Ivan Drago.
And, yeah, and anytime Iowa State would try to get in the lane, they had help. And they have some height, right? So it was a struggle for Iowa State. When they spread it out, you can't leave Naz, Matt, Jackson, or Monte open for threes because they'll hit it. So Swanigan's got to guard Deontay in space, and he can't guard Deontay in space. And it was just beautiful to see in our defense. When you do that, you give them a mismatch in offense, but, man, you're really struggling on defense. And we did such a great job as far as getting our hands on the ball. Reaching in, I thought the zone when they were both Haas and Swanigan in there for a short period of time too was fantastic, and we rebounded pretty well until the end of the game when we gave up those free throws where they got the rebound. But you're right,
you can't kill them over that. That was those bad misses off the heel.
When you don't have any height,
you can box out Swanigan all you want. He's getting that in the upper half of the lane. He's going to get that.
Yeah, no, I'm not killing anyone.
He was at an advantage being there.
Yeah. I thought Deontay didn't need to say what he said. I get it. I think it was great of him. He took the fault for that. Said I should have boxed him out more. I have to go back and watch a replay. I haven't watched it yet, but I was there. I thought that was, like you said, just one of those where the ball just kind of bounced in a rough spot. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should go back and watch. But
and the three that swirled around and went in. How many? 9 out of 10 times that swirling around and popping out.
And we had guys right there for the rebound.
It's just weird to see it go.
Yeah, that was tough. I mean, not only Iowa State fans, but there wasn't a Purdue fan in the building that thought Purdue was going to win that game when Iowa State went up too. I mean, the crowd was incredible. And shout out to Cyclone fans that are listening to this too that went up to Milwaukee. You know, the week before Iowa State's in Kansas City, people go down there to celebrate, spend a ton of money in hotels, tickets, food, restaurants. And then you go to Milwaukee, it's not a cheap place up there. The hotels weren't cheap. The tickets sure as hell were not cheap. I mean, the tickets to get to a game on Saturday you paid a good price just to get up in the nosebleeds, right?
Yeah.
And they still were there and clearly outnumbered Purdue, were louder than the Purdue fans. So shout out to Cyclone Nation. I thought it was awesome. It was a great environment, and it was kind of a bummer that Iowa State couldn't finish and couldn't get the job done because, unfortunately, now we'll no longer see these guys play as Cyclones. And it was a treat for the last 4 years to watch them play. Not only just because of all the wins, but the fight in those guys.
Yeah.
We saw, I mean, how many games was Iowa State down by 20, 19, 15 over the 4 years of these guys' career where you're like, you know what, tonight's just another night. And 2 minutes later, boom, like that, all of a sudden we're back in the game and cheering. I mean, that is, you go across college basketball, I don't know if there's any team that's had more 10-point comebacks in the last 4 years than Iowa State.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
And I'm making that stat up off the top of my head. It's the way it feels to me as a Cyclone fan.
Yeah, I mean, we touched, obviously, on senior night, we did a lot of talking about these guys' careers, so probably not going to dwell on that as much.
But we could
here, but yeah, I mean, back to the fans. I mean, obviously, I was at home and hearing through the TV throughout the time. Now, you know me; I'm generally a positive person, and I think I tweeted at some point that, you know, whatever happens here, let's enjoy these guys and whatever. But, you know, a lot of people liked it. I had a feeling they were going to – this was – they were almost down 19 at that point.
Yeah.
And here comes the comeback.
Yep.
And throughout all of that, though, you'd hear – I'd hear through my TV speakers, let's go, State. Let's go,
Crowd was
State.
Amazing. Amazing.
Never did they give up on that team. And those guys never gave up on themselves. And that's the beauty of these seniors. That's the beauty of the fan base. It's why it was the match made in heaven. It's a shame you only got the two Sweet 16s out of it. Probably could have had a national title, at least a Final Four, if George doesn't get hurt. Who knows this year if the first step, if they figure it out maybe a little bit earlier and go smaller more to get Haas off the court as much as you can.
Yep.
A lot of questions in that game, though. As long as Swanigan sat and Iowa State made his – I don't know how much he stops it, though, because Burton's going to drive by him every single time.
Oh,
so,
yeah. See, and I'm not killing Prone for doing it. He probably went to the small ball a little late, but at the same time, that's scary, Rob. When you go small ball and your tallest guy is 6'5" against that team with that height, I mean, that's one where he's probably trying to avoid doing it as much as possible. But when Iowa State got down 17, they had no – I mean, they pretty much had to.
We've got some breaking news here, by the way.
Oh, breaking news.
I'll do a voice because I always like to do a voice.
People,
I'll do like
people
a newsman,
love the voice.
A newsman's voice. Just in, Simeon Carter to transfer from Iowa State. Not a shock.
Not a surprise.
I'll interject there outside of my newsman voice. Iowa State sophomore forward Simeon Carter is transferring from the men's basketball program, head coach Steve Prohm announced Tuesday. I met with Simeon following the season. He's informed me he's decided to transfer. That's my terrible prom. We need CW.
Come on, man. Your prom is not very good,
man. Come on, man. We wish him the best, and we will assist him in any way we can as he looks for a new school. Not a surprise. He wasn't going to play. Didn't play much since very early on. Wish him the best. He was a great cheerleader for this group.
He was a great cheerleader. He was always up on the sideline.
His attitude did not seem to be an issue. Right?
No,
which
no.
Which is good. Find him a good low mid-major maybe. Get him some minutes.
Yep. And Iowa State fans would cheer for him because, like you said, it wasn't one where he got in trouble a whole lot. I think he got maybe a couple of small little
things.
Like you said, attitude was always great. Seemed like a good teammate. Easy guy for Iowa State fans to cheer for if they see him down the road playing for whoever he's going to be playing for. So best of luck to Simeon. But what it does is it opens up a 4 scholarship.
Yep.
That's a lot of scholarships still to open up, which, you know, they're going to go get a JUCO, probably a grad transfer.
At least one grad transfer. Do you think they might go two?
They might. I mean, we'll see. There's room for it.
Yep.
But the question that comes back to my head right now as I'm hearing this, do you think that the coaching staff, and they'll never admit it, and I don't even know if you, Rob, can ever ask it, they could go back and do it over again? You get rid of Simeon Carter and keep Ernst, who's now going to Brady, who's now going to Xavier.
Mm. Yeah, I think he would have probably tried to find a way to hang on to Ernst. He had a lot of upside. Yeah, has a lot of upside. Just a skilled player, big guy.
Still not really been able to get any definite real reason why he is gone.
And who knows exactly what it was. Maybe he felt he needed to change the scenery. I mean, it could have been as simple as that. Maybe he was really wanting to say, hey, we really want to showcase you after this. Maybe he really wanted to play once he felt he was healthy instead of sitting. We don't know what it is. But, yeah, this team would look, you know, and we don't know what he'll do once he starts playing.
No, you don't,
again,
but Xavier's, I mean, they're Sweet 16 team again, right? And all they do is
Chris
win,
Mack.
And Chris Mack's a hell of a coach.
They do it every single time that I've decided that
they're done.
I'm not going to pick them for the Sweet 16 this
I
year.
Thought they shouldn't even in the tournament because Sumner was out, and they just haven't been very good lately. And I'm like, well, this team right now is not an NCAA tournament team, and what do they do? Not only did they beat Florida State, they kicked the living crap out of them.
I mean, it was crazy in some of those matchups. If Virginia and Florida play 10 times, I'll bet it's 5-5. I'll bet it is. Virginia loses by 25. Just utterly steamrolled. 64-39, wasn't it?
39. You watch Virginia play this year. That team was a shell of last year. This team could not score at all. Defensively, they were just as good.
Yeah.
But, man, offensively, they struggled to score.
Yeah.
But, of course, you know what? I still picked them to beat Florida.
I picked them to beat Florida and then get beat. I mean, no one wants to hear about our brackets other than to know that.
Should we talk about our fantasy baseball and football teams right now? Next?
Yeah, I think. How about we just extend this podcast another hour? Nothing but that.
Everybody's turning it off right now.
Hey, I need to redeem myself with my Marv Albert voice. Could I do one?
Yeah, go ahead.
For Matt Thomas, maybe hitting a three?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Monte Morris takes the inbound pass. Over to Nas Mitrulong. Into the corner. Matt Thomas for three. Yes.
The yes is what made it right there. That was where you...
I haven't done more for a long time.
Have you seen the movie Trainwreck?
I have not.
Where Marv Albert is there and he's like moderating like a little
sit-down. It's just Albert, not Alberts. It's not like Trev.
It's not like Trev Alberts. They're not related. It's not father. I always thought they were father and son.
I'm just having fun.
No. Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. But yeah, Simeon Carter, not surprising news. Wish him the best of luck. Going to be very interesting to see who Iowa State goes and gets because, you know, we can sit here and ask the question, is Iowa State going to go to the NCAA tournament or the NIT team? Nobody can answer that question because we don't know what the team's going to look like next year. Hopefully, Prohm and his staff can go out and get, you know, two contributors right away for next year. And that, you know, I say that it's going to have to be a grad transfer and maybe if you get lucky on a JUCO kid because more times than not, when you sign guys in the spring – if it's not a grad transfer,
yeah,
good luck.
Yep.
Like, if you actually go back in Iowa State history over the last 15, 20 years and look at who Iowa State signed in the spring, there are a couple hits, but percentage-wise, it's not nearly as good as those fall signees. So yeah. I'm always a little bit hesitant. But hopefully there's a couple good grad transfers. A wing score would be nice, and obviously a post would be nice.
Every year there are more. And I'm glad that they're afforded this type of free agency now. I mean, I think it's been so tilted the other way, guys getting more or less trapped at times. You know, give a guy a chance that showed himself to be a great player at the mid-major level, maybe didn't have a lot of success as a team. Give the guy a chance to go play for a team that might contend or be a guy that can be
the guy
to push them over the top. I mean, how valuable is that for those guys to be able to just not only as individuals, but be able to help another team. And sometimes it goes the other way too. Sometimes you're lightly used on a high major team and you can go maybe to a mid major team that's got a pretty good pedigree and you can play more and help them.
Yeah.
You know, Oakland almost made it with some Sharon Dorsey Walker. I don't know if they're still going in the NIT.
They just lost.
But, you know, it can go both ways, and it's good to see, you know, the student-athletes get a little bit of choice there at the end.
I think Prohm's got a fantastic opportunity as far as selling to these recruits. Hey, we've gone to six straight NCAA tournaments. We're going to finish the year ranked again, I would imagine. I would think Iowa State's going to finish the year ranked.
Yeah.
Here we are. If you watch, turn on the TV. I mean, you can come see Hilton for yourself, and TV doesn't do it any justice. But still, watch any game across the country and then watch a game in Hilton and tell me it doesn't stand out to you. Tell me it's not different. It is different. And players got to want to play there. And not only in Hilton. You go down to Kansas City. You go to Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And then you watch a game on TV. I was in Milwaukee. Did it stand out to you from being a little bit louder and more different than any other game you've been watching in the NCAA tournament?
I don't know if it was any other game, but certainly at that venue, it stood out that it was very
– very loud.
It had the type of feel that you don't always have in first weekend games.
You can sell this fan base. You can sell the fact that they will be there every night cheering for you. And, hey, come in where we got Donovan Jackson coming back. We have – a borderline five-star point guard in Lindell Wigginton coming in from Oak Hill. Mm-hmm. And we got a couple other nice pieces that if you come in, you can contribute right away and we can keep this train rolling. Let's get back to the seventh straight NCAA tournament. I think the opportunity is there for Iowa State, but I'm not going to predict Iowa State to go to the NCAA tournament or anything until I see kind of where they finish up this class.
No, I'd agree with you there. And I think they'll add guys that really take – but then again, it's a whole new group. And in the Big 12 – you know, obviously Oklahoma State's going through an unexpected transition that they seem to have kind of brought on themselves.
How about that?
Yeah, it's just wild.
And then did you see Evans is going pro today?
He might have come back.
Yeah, I mean,
he said he was leaning that way after, or at least he was strongly considering it.
72 hours ago, Iowa State fans were terrified of the direction of Oklahoma State and where they're going.
Yeah.
Now we sit here today. Shoot, that might be just a cupcake for the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
They might. I mean, you never know. They could go out and get a stud, but Forte's gone.
Yeah,
Evans
is
gone.
Carroll. Carroll could grad transfer, couldn't he?
Yeah, come down straight. He could.
Can you imagine if Jeffrey Carroll's a?
I'm
sick and tired of losing in Ames, Iowa.
Yeah,
I'm sick and tired of losing to Iowa State. I'm gonna go play for him.
That'd be great.
Can you imagine a player of that caliber?
Ooh. Oh, he'd be that wing scorer we need, wouldn't he?
Yeah. I only had this one small, fine scotch from you, and all of a sudden I feel like I'm dreaming about something there.
I'm glad that someone
guzzled the rest, maybe.
You did guzzle it? That's when
I sipped it.
That's when the voices came out. Because once you finished that scotch, you got it felt a little bit more loose, and we started the Mauer Valbrus.
I just feel bad about the very poor prom one. If I practiced at it, I'd be okay.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But enough about me. The basketball is, I'm totally on board with you in terms of we have no idea what the makeup's going to be like, but I love the type of leader that I think Donovan Jackson can be and the type of contributor I think he can be. We saw it down the stretch, the way he shot the three, defended. There weren't a lot of lapses for him on the defensive end at all, especially once he got acclimated to his role and into the team, and he finishes so well too.
He's faster than bleep. He's quick. He can shoot it, we've seen. My only question is, if he's the guy, and he's going to be the guy, especially early on next year, how good will he be as far as a guy? Because he's not very big. He's not one of those guys where you feel too terribly comfortable with going and creating his own shot because he's smaller. I mean, he's 5'10", 5'11". That's my only concern with Donovan Jackson.
You know, it might be back to going to having a point guard that averages 3.5 to 4 assists. But can get you more points. A lot of teams are like that. I mean, who was it? The Nevada with their stud. He was averaging 20 points, like 3.5 assists. But other guys could do it. I think Nick Weiler-Babb is a really good distributor.
But this, you're going to see I should not say this, but Donovan Jackson's efficiency scoring is going to drop next year. He's not going to shoot same percentage of three that he has because he's not going to have Monte and Naz and those guys getting him wide open shots in transition. He's the guy that's going to be needed. Now, I'm not saying he's not going to get some. He will. But his role is going to change a little bit. And the people are going to be more focused on him. Where before, the focus was kind of, you know, he got lost a lot of times by defenses and he was able to hit shots.
Yep.
So I caution people a little bit. I still think Donovan's going to be a great player. I'm excited for him. But
it's going to be a transition for him too.
Yeah.
And they'll, you know, work to figure it out, find ways to – you know, get him to cut loose, you know, get him cut loose a little bit more. But I think Babb might make the biggest jump that, you know, of anyone in this roster. We saw him come on late in the season. He can do so many things. He is a good passer, good defender. As of right now, I mean, if we went in with the roster we have, and if you figure you're just adding a couple of pedestrian players, it would be hard to predict much other than a pretty not grim, but a pretty basic rebuilding year. But, you know, Wigginton, as you said, I mean, if anybody's watched his highlights, which I'm sure anyone listening to us has, I mean, that guy's got elite skills.
He can score.
Yeah.
He can score the basketball. No, I'm excited for him. I'm excited for the whole, you know, Terrence Lewis can come in. He can be that wing scorer that Iowa State needs, a shooter, kind of take a little bit of pressure off everyone else.
It's Colby Long. I mean, he came in, his defense was touted. He's tall. He's rangy. He's probably stronger being in the weight room. I mean, he was people were excited about him being recruited. So now he has a year of seasoning. Can he take a, you know, big step? I mean, like you said, though, I mean, anything could happen. I mean, you could be hoping for a CBI bid at the end of the year. You could be thinking, oh, wow, they're going to manage to somehow get to another school record 7th straight NCAA tournament.
Yep.
All hinges on what's going to happen, on the trail.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, to me, just once again, it comes back to the two guys that are the X Factor, Babb, and then I forgot to mention that on Cameron Lard. No one has any idea. And not only, I think if you ask the coaching staff, I don't really think they even know what they're going to get out of him yet. Obviously he's long. He's got some athleticism, but they've had some guys that are long and athletic that haven't played before too. So it's more than just that, especially at the bit. You have to have a motor.
Yep.
And you got to have a little bit of toughness down low in the Big 12. So I'm excited though. It's going to be different, but I'm happy Prohm's our coach and I'm excited for the future.
Well said.
Well, we're not going to get into the president Iowa State talk, are we?
No, we'll just let that go.
We'll wait for whoever they.
Sure, they'll have a fine president hired in the near future.
Okay, perfect. Anything else we need to talk about?
No.
Let's finish up just quick. Who's gonna go to the Final Four? Who's gonna win the national championship? Oof.
I picked Carolina from the beginning. I'm gonna stick with them.
Okay.
I think Kentucky gets UCLA, and then they go to I, 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 I don't like UCLA as much as some people. And then UNC gets out of there. I don't know. I've forecasted a North Carolina Gonzaga national championship game, and that's what I'm going to stick with. And I've got the Tar Heels finding a way to pull it off.
Okay. Yeah, I had North Carolina win it before, and they had a fluky game against Arkansas, which led them to be down for a majority of the game. It was one of those where the balls was just bouncing to Arkansas all the time. But they won, and there's a lot of times that teams have gone on to win national championships when they've had games kind of like that Arkansas game. I agree with you. Even though UCLA went and won at Kentucky, I don't trust Steve Alford in the NCAA tournament, so I'll take Kentucky now. But North Carolina getting out. To me, the one that I don't know is the West region. You have Gonzaga, West Virginia, and Arizona.
Yeah.
Flip a coin on any three of those teams, in my opinion. I could see any three of them winning.
And what about Wisconsin, the way that experience carried them through? I mean, they play Villanova 10 times. They lose 8.
Yeah.
I mean, but that experience with the Hayes and the talent of a Hap and
Koenig clutches,
just doing so many things, even with foul trouble, that's the type of matchup you would hate. And it looked like Michigan State was going to be that type of matchup for Kansas, too. I wouldn't be surprised if Kansas, you know, makes a run at this, too.
The East is tough. South Carolina, Baylor, Florida, and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Really, you could see any of those teams getting out of there. And South Carolina being the least likely of the four, I would imagine. Yeah. But I'll stay in the Big 12. I think Baylor gets out of that one because I think I feel more comfortable picking them to beat South Carolina than I do Wisconsin or Florida. Both those teams are well coached, play good defense. And in those kind of games, you flip a coin because, you know, it's a shot here or there. It's kind of like the Iowa State game, right? You can go back in the Iowa State versus Purdue game. There's probably 15 plays where you look at, man, if that play just would have gone the other way, Iowa State would have won. Yeah. Oh, man, if that ball would have just rolled around and not hit off the backboard and gone back in, Iowa State would have won. Yep. I think that we're going to see that in the Wisconsin-Florida game. But I'll take Kansas in the Midwest. I think Purdue's a tough matchup for them, just like they were for Iowa State. But that game's in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. That's essentially a home game for them. Yeah, but the game of the Michigan and Oregon is the game I'm looking forward to the most. Those are two teams that can get up and down the court and score.
Yeah, two teams that certainly faced adversity with Michigan with the plane and Oregon losing Bouchard, one of their best players.
Yep.
You know, their real presence inside. Well, they have other, their main presence inside and a great scorer as well. So,
do you have one team you're cheering for?
I don't. I'm a member of the press. I don't cheer.
That's only if you're
I'm in the press box.
If you're covering it.
I think it would be fun to. I think it would be fun to get a Kansas North Carolina matchup. That's all I'm trying to say.
Well, they would be in the Final Four.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to see that matchup in the Final Four. But I guess I'd cheer for a Gonzaga being a mid-major team, even though they built themselves up into an elite program.
That's who I'm cheering for.
It's nice to get that type of team. And also, before we go, it always crops up this time of year, and it always drives me crazy. The conference defenders, the fans of conferences, like, hey, it looks like the Big Ten was pretty damn good this year, right? Three teams. Right, okay. And I guess since the ACC has won, the West Coast Conference, Gonzaga, is exactly as good as the ACC.
Yep.
I mean, it just
You knew it was coming.
That Baylor, yes, it happens every year, one way or the other, and everybody does it in every conference. So I'm not trying to pick on the Big Ten because I've enjoyed Big Ten basketball and football all my life. But it just that stuff just drives me crazy. And then people fall in on it, and then now I'm falling in on it. I'm just gonna flush it. I had to. Put it out there and say, why do people do that?
I'll jump in on that. That was the frustrating part for me. I get back to the bus after the Iowa State-Purdue game, and I jump on Twitter, and I make my post, and I'm looking through, expecting to see a lot of stuff about the game. And the thing that were overwhelming that I was seeing was, A, idiot local reporter running his mouth, and B...
Don't call him a reporter, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. B... His fans going back and forth with like Big Ten schools. Like this was like this game that proved anything Big Ten or Big 12. And, you know, I even had friends saying this and I just said, hey, listen, everyone, the Big Ten looks very good right now. And kudos to them for winning a couple games. I go, but Kansas and Baylor are going to win tomorrow. And when they do, the Big 12 will have 3 out of 10 and the Big 12 will have 3 out of 10 and Big 10 will have 3 out of 14. And are you telling me then at that point that the Big 12 is better?
How many more bids did they have too?
They had one more bid. 3 out of 7, and we've had three out of six. But the argument, whether or not they had 3 or 4 or 5, to me is irrelevant. I don't understand how one game, it's not the NBA where you play best of seven, how one game series all of a sudden erases the 30-some games that are played in the regular season.
Well, so it shows that they have better coaches because they peak at the right time. You know what? It's matchups. It's that. And again, kudos to every team that wins.
Wisconsin, great win.
I mean,
Michigan, Michigan had two great wins.
Yes, yes. And
that Michigan-Oklahoma State game,
Purdue was the higher seed. I mean, it was a 4-5 game.
They were like a one-point favorite, right?
Yeah, something like that. But, I mean, I just wish people would give that a rest. Cheer for your team. If you want to cheer for a conference, say great. But don't make it looks like we're better than you because we have more teams in the Sweet 16. Well, what happens if all those teams lose and you have no one in the Final Four? This happens every year. Someone crows about their conference getting the Sweet 16, and then maybe all those teams lose. Doesn't matter what conference. Could be the Big 12, could be ACC, could be Big 10, whatever. And then by the Final Four, maybe they got nobody. It's like, oh, well, I guess it peaked at the kind of right time. I'm done with it now.
I did enjoy. I'm glad we got the actual voice in, though. You know,
I gotta bring that voice out whenever I can.
It's a great voice. People appreciate it. And you know,
you need to do some voices. You're such an ego. You consider your own voice the definitive and
greatest. I'm waiting for other people to imitate me. Yeah. Shut up.
I'll work on it someday.
You know who else I appreciate?
Heartland Flags.
Heartland Flags. Yeah, I appreciate them for the sponsorship of this podcast. The best podcast Cyclone Fanatic has to offer, Rob.
Really?
Two Shades of Gray.
I'd say so.
And it's brought to you by our good friends, heartlandflagpoles.com. Check them out. Stop on their website. Buy yourself a flag. Buy yourself a bunch of flags. Get them to come on out and set up the flagpole in your yard. And that way, when Iowa State starts the football season next year with a victory, you can fly it high and proud.
Yeah, tell them Cyclone Fanatic.
Tell them Cyclone Fanatic sent you. Yep. All right, Rob, I appreciate it.
Thanks for doing this.
We'll see you next week, buddy.
Cheers.